Yeah, we're back on In Focus News Radio KMAN. Brandon Peoples and Dave Lewis on the other side of the glass. We're talking today with K-State Assistant Professor of Communication Studies, Dr. Tim Schaefer. He's also the Assistant Director of the Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy. And we're going to talk a little bit here about, there's an issue coming up next Tuesday's Election Day.
Yes, and you should vote.
Yeah, you definitely should vote, absolutely. And there is a constitutional amendment question on the ballot that I don't think a lot of people are aware of, and I know you have mm-hmm. some knowledge of this subject.
Yeah, so, yeah, as you mentioned, the election's next Tuesday. You can early vote now, so I would encourage people just to simplify the process depending on where you are and schedules and times and things like that. But there is, I mean, this is one of those instances. There's a few things that people really want to, are going to want to pay attention to. One is a potential tax increase on sales tax here. But the other one that might surprise folks is this constitutional amendment. And so it is something that has been somewhat quietly, and this is partly why I think there's a bit of a blitz right now to try to put it out there in front of folks. But the legislature has supported this. There has been no opposition to it. And the issue is that when the census takes place, which we are required to do per the Constitution, and we do it every 10 years, states apportion legislatures and, based off of that. And so states have a little bit of flexibility with that, and Kansas has been one of them and is now technically the last to still kind of augment what happens at the federal level. So the U.S. government will have folks across the state doing the census, right, capturing populations. A handful of states, and as I noted, Kansas is the last one, would then kind of do their own version of that. And the way that it was done historically was Kansas used to allot a member of the legislature from every county, and then there were only a small number that would then be divided based off of population. Very quickly, as we now know, right, there are a lot of western counties particularly that are very low, and so that was wildly unequal. And so they went to a distribution model, but they still use their own kind of census information that they would collect to apportion that. What would happen, though, and this is the big issue, is that historically it would work off of the fact that both universities and militaries had the possibility to be asked the question, where do you want to be counted, right? So is it here if you're a student at K-State? Is it here in Manhattan? Or is it from, you know, fill-in-the-blank county from where you're from, right, if you're from in-state? Which you can start to see gets a little complicated. So there are a couple reasons that the state has, the legislature and others have really been pushing for this. Is it costs a lot of money to actually do this, right? Because it's truly a second census that takes place. And then secondly is just from a kind of an equity standpoint, because the census is to basically track where people are at a given time. And in that situation, if they're here, then they're here. And so the trade-offs, which everything always has trade-offs, right? There are some winners and losers, and there have been some groups that have kind of made some good videos and things to kind of communicate this in a popular way. The variation has been very minimal. So there's a lot of investment of time and money to make this possible, make it happen, but it really hasn't had a huge effect. The only thing that has impacted in a slightly more significant way are particularly university communities and places where military are. So this region, for example, can really be hit. So if this were this amendment were to take place, that would mean places like Manhattan, probably Lawrence, and some of these other towns with big universities, for example, might gain another seat within the state legislature. But generally speaking, it'll be pretty much similar to what it is. The biggest factors, again, are it's going to reflect actually where people are, which is what a census does. And then secondly, it doesn't cost because it's already being done by the federal government. So I think Alaska was one of the other last few states that did something like this, and they have abandoned it. So it's been a long time coming, but, you know, making any big change, especially with a constitution, for example, is very challenging, even if it's straightforward and fairly simple. So that's what this is. So I would encourage people as they're listening to look at this a little bit more, right? Don't just take what I'm saying, but find out a little bit of information so you can walk in, because there's nothing worse than walking into a voting booth and not fully understanding what's going on. Because some of this also has like legalese, right? It's hard to read. And you think you're like, I want to say yes or I want to say no to this thing. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, what does this actually mean? And it gets complicated. And so I would encourage folks just to take a look at it. But that will be on the ballot along with that sales tax increase and some other stuff. And so, you know, it's good to be knowledgeable as much as possible. And there are lots of resources you can find. You know, League of Women Voters is a really good place. You know, the departments of the local government that kind of oversees elections, things like that, they have information. So you can find stuff. I would just encourage people to be as diligent and thoughtful as possible.
Yeah, nothing worse than not knowing what you're voting for.
Well, I mean, in that moment, right, when you go in a booth and all of a sudden you feel somewhat of a sense of pressure, right? You know, some of it might be pretty straightforward or simple for you, but some of it really might require a little bit of time to think about it. And if you want to go through it and read it, and, you know, if you're there with kids or if you've got some other kind of factor that comes into play, if you got a ride or whatever it might be, like, you don't want to rush these things, but you do want to be, you know, give due diligence and, you know, you can be efficient in the process. It's just you have to walk in with a little bit of knowledge before.
All right. Again, you mentioned early voting's open here. I think they're going to even do some early voting on Saturday from 8 a.m. to noon, again on Monday. And that's been a real convenience for a lot of folks. There's more accessibility, I think, to elections.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. is one of these places that still retains, you know, quote, election day in the way that we have it. But a lot of states, and this is where it varies considerably from place to place, of what early elections look like and how they take place and where. And it's tremendous. I'm somebody who spends a lot of time thinking about citizen participation and democracy and these types of ideas. And I always err on the side of, you know, let's make it easier and fairer, more accessible for people. As we know, I mean, this is why if you have the ability to go vote early, I would encourage you to do it because you don't know what's going to happen on that day, right? You might have transportation kind of fall through. You might get sick, right? You don't expect things to happen and all of a sudden your day changes. So there are these types of things that can just be unexpected. You know, we had somewhat freakish weather this morning that was, you know, slowed people down getting on the roads and stuff. So if all of a sudden you're a shift worker or if you have to be somewhere at a certain time, you need to be cognizant of the factors that come into play. And if all of a sudden there's a longer line than you think, right, you may be like, well, I'll just come back later. Well, maybe you do. Maybe you don't. And that's really unfortunate. And regardless of what you decide and how you vote, people should participate in the process, right? This is, you should be informed and you should participate. And so there are a couple of easy ways to do that, right? Read up, pay attention, kind of be aware of what's happening. And again, I would just encourage people to utilize the time frame that is available to them now. You know, election can span out more than just a day. And I'd encourage you to think about it that way.
Dr. Schaefer, just a couple of quick things here. Your thoughts on vote by mail. There are many out there that advocate that this may be as fair and as simple a process as any voting process.
Yeah, so voting by mail has become popular in a number of places. I was just following a story not long ago in Maryland. They were trying to go to this, and they were realizing it was going to cost a lot. It was like for a county, it was going to be like another $300,000 or something to actually implement it, and so they were wrestling with it. But states like Oregon, for example, they vote by mail, everybody. And so they have it across the board. And they actually have they're a really good example of this kind of stuff that I often talk about. But they have something called the Citizens Initiative Review, where they have ordinary folks. If they have like a ballot initiative go on, they'll organize a group of people who are representative of the state population, talk with experts and others kind of advocating for stuff. And then they'll create a document that's easy to read, not legalese, and goes out with the mail ballot for people so they can say, oh, here's this thing we're going to vote on. And, you know, 15 out of 25 people say yes and for these reasons. And, you know, 10 out of 25 say no. But the voting by mail is a big question, right? Because it's really getting at this, like, what's accessible to people, what's easy, also what's fair and safe, right? I mean, so
Foolproof.
I mean, this is what it often comes down to is, Do we trust these systems? And generally, we can say yes, right? Or if, you know, I didn't get, you know, I don't know if you've experienced it, but sometimes you just don't get stuff in the mail. It's my mom's greatest fear, by the way.
I just don't open things from
the mail. Yeah, well, that also might be true. But right, I mean, we generally don't go checking people's mailboxes. But if you're operating from a standpoint that if all of a sudden you know these things are going out, you might run around and you can see where it starts to get complicated. That like, well, no, that wasn't me, even though it says it was me, right? Those kinds of factors. But you know, people have been the last number of years really looking at using technology as a way to vote and limitations there, and you know, blockchain, which I still don't even totally understand, right? All this kind of stuff becoming factors, and how do we, you know, how do we secure these processes in elections? But yeah, voting by mail is an interesting possibility. A lot of places it's worked pretty well, but I think people still have the concerns about it. There's something to be said about me walking in, handing a card to somebody. You know, we do all this kind of process. You can, yeah, I mean, anything is something you can beat if you really want to try. But it happens so rarely in any of these processes, whether it's face-to-face or even by mail, that I would not say the safety factor is the big concern. I mean, the big concern that a lot of folks have is usually around the technology being, frankly, outdated and being able to be kind of hacked in those ways. And so one of the biggest arguments happening in this space is around even going back to just like paper ballots, which complicates it, right? It's a lot easier to have some system tell you, you know, thousands of people have voted one way or another, in contrast to sitting there and looking at the, you know, they fill in the bubble or they X the box or whatever it might be. So elections are one part of a bigger system, but it's a huge part, right? I mean, and we get reminded of that right now, that, you know, our lives are going to be impacted by the ways that people choose to vote and how they choose to participate. So you ought to, and I think we also need to be diligent about that and factoring in that there are a lot of people who want to impact it. Not nearly as many as I think some might think, but it's not foolproof.
And one of the things that I know that Riley County Clerk Rich Vargo has talked about this, because, you know, he's the head of the elections and such for Riley County, is getting to know what's on your ballot before you go into
exactly.
the voting booth.
Yep, yep.
And you have an opportunity. You can go on your respective county's website
mm-hmm.
and,
yep.
and check your precinct's ballot, because, you know, we got the city of Manhattan has the sales tax issue.
Yes.
Riley County schools have their bond issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so there are a number of things, including this constitutional amendment, which is flying under the radar. But, you know, it's surprising that when you have an amendment matter that really sees little, if any, opposition.
Yeah. I mean, and that one's a good example. It didn't get big press previously because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't necessarily contentious, right? It didn't elicit a lot of responses from people. And understandably, right? I think because
that was me. Sorry.
That's okay. Very nice voice, just not mine.
Yeah, or mine.
It's a ghost. It is Halloween, right? So
it
here we
is.
Are. But the fact is that, you know, here's one of these bipartisan efforts that has been pushed through, and it, you know, didn't get a lot of fanfare because it hasn't been contentious. I mean, this, as you know, folks who are in the media, like one of the challenges is when things don't elicit the big response, like it doesn't have the same level of excitement, right? So, you know, it's not totally surprising. It is unfortunate, though, that only now and even in recent days have I started to see and hear something about it. And no time prior, right?
Yeah.
I mean, literally days, maybe a week prior, that all of a sudden there are some things. And understandably, they're trying to target people because now all of a sudden folks are thinking about, oh, what am I going to vote for? What are the things I could vote for, right? Those kinds of factors. And here it is. But again, I would echo your point. Be as knowledgeable as possible. Understand the language. And I'm not saying you should just vote like a party line or whatever it is that somebody else says. But you want to know that you understand the issue as fully as possible, and you can make that informed decision, and you can capture that right on a ballot. And because this is real, right? You know, sales taxes are real. Those impact people differently, but like that's a very real kind of pocketbook issue. The amendment is also something, right? When we think about the state legislature, if a community like Manhattan or Riley County or even broader, like, could have another representative, that would be potentially impactful. And it's not to say like we want to steal it from somebody else, but if we want a system that's as fair as possible and is efficient, right? I mean, so here's one of those things that starts talking about equity and cost and all this. I mean, it can appeal to a whole bunch of people, but you want to understand it. And if you still say, you know, we ought not to do this, then that's good.
I think something that's been interesting about the sales tax issue for the city of Manhattan, there's been a number of publications and things that have been passed out. I've received a couple of them on my doors.
Yep.
They're all from out of city sources. And even like some of the very conservative PACs that are here in town, Our Manhattan is one, they're supportive of the sales tax issue because, you know, the potential, especially with the levy situation,
right.
You know, is trying to keep property taxes down.
Right.
And that's something that they're going to have to do.
Yeah, and maybe it's worth just a moment here to spend on that. For example, right, in one breath you might say, gosh, sales tax, we already pay a very high sales tax, across the board for things. Especially from where I'm from, we didn't pay any sales tax on groceries, right? So that was like a mm-hmm. kind of a gut punch when we moved here and I realized that everything. But the trade-off is, right, if it's not sales tax, it's going to come from someplace. And if you own a home here, property tax, these factors come into play. And, sales tax, the advantages are that, in one sense, it's affecting everybody. So some are going to be disproportionately impacted, especially low income. High income, it's going to matter considerably less. But sales tax also, we just had a football game, right? A lot of people came in town. Presume I was in Aggieville. I'm hanging out at home. Thank you very much. But I'm assuming
I was hanging out at home. Too.
Okay, well that's
Thank
good.
You very much.
I'm assuming that people were down eating restaurants and doing all sorts of things who aren't from here. And that's where a sales tax initiative makes a lot more sense. And that's been the argument that they've made. Right, is that it's impacting people well beyond the scope of those who are immediately here in this vicinity and live here. And so those are the kinds of factors you want to think about. Right, you can maybe say if I say no to sales tax, maybe there won't be anything. But they've largely said if it's not here, it's going to be somewhere else, right? Things cost money, and money needs to come from someplace. And so, this is the tension and trade-off, right? There's nothing free, right? And we just need to figure out how to attend to it and where do we want to spend money, whether it's my money and your money or somebody else's money.
All right, we'll talk more with Tim Schaefer after the break. News Radio KMAN.